How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Jen, Bo, what up?
Hey, Cam, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Or should I say, Cam Ho?
we did that joke in another episode, do you remember?
Did we?
No. You seriously don't remember that? Oh, Jen.
No, I have short-term memory.
We really did.
I don't remember.
Oh.
No, I'm sure, and I'm sure it was just as funny then as it is now.
It's almost like I've heard it before, so not so much, but that's okay.
So how you holding up? How's things going?
Oh, you know, I'm ready for winter. I'm ready for snow. I'm ready for a lot of stuff. Let's just put it that way. You know, things could be better, but they could always be worse, Jen. You got to count your blessings as you have them. You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. I know what you're saying very well.
How are you?
And I agree. I concur. I'm doing fine.
Yeah? Yeah.
Holding it in there. What you got for us?
I got a You know I love this word, and I don't know why. I just like it. Humdinger. It's a humdinger.
I was going to say humdinger.
It is a humdinger. That's one of my favorite words. I don't know why.
It's almost like we've been friends for 38 years, and I know what you're going to say.
You can read my mind, Jen. All right,
we
ready?
We finish each other's sandwiches.
We do, literally, without the other one knowing, and then one of us gets mad. Okay, that's all. All right, Jen, you ready?
That's a Frozen quote, too, from the movie Frozen.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I escaped that because my kid was a little bit too old for that. Thank goodness.
Let's hear it.
You ready? It's a good one. Here we go. Jen, today we are going to the famous and well-known Madison Avenue.
Madison Avenue?
Yeah.
They do. In New York City?
No, Jen, not that one in NYC, but in GCI. That's right. Granite City, Illinois. Right across from us.
Woohoo! That's right across the river from us.
It is. I'm glad you mentioned that.
And you know what? Our friend Scooter's from there.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I forgot about that.
Scooter, who I absolutely love and adore.
Hi, Scooter. So a little background about Granite City, and this is something I didn't know, and I'm going to guess you didn't either. Now, Granite City is located across the Mississippi River from the Sweet Lou, which is where we live, and it is in Madison County. It's considered to be part of what we call the metro area around these parts, meaning that it is part of the greater St. Louis metropolitan area. And that includes all the St. Louis suburbs, as well as the city, as well as those little towns across the river, such as Belleville, Granite City, Sauget, you know, those cities. Officially founded in 1896, Granite City was named by the Nedringhouse brothers, William and Frederick, who established it as a steel-making company town for the manufacture of, and this is what I thought was interesting, of kitchen utensils made to resemble granite. Granite City. I never thought, because it is a steel town, but they call it Granite City instead of Steel City.
I always wondered why that, too. And then I thought, well, maybe in like 100 years back, they were mining for granite.
Nope. It was in the late 1800s.
Interesting.
So just stay tuned. This is why.
We could almost use this if there's ever going to be a trivia.
Now, I never knew this, obviously, because I was a little shocked about all this. And, I think that's pretty interesting. So I had to dive in, of course. Now, the town is still a working town today. It's very industrial looking if you're from over there and you don't like that. I'm sorry, but it's true. Now, did you know, Jen, many other well-known companies call Granite City home, such as U.S. Steel, Precoat Metals, ready? Capri Sun, Kraft.
Really?
Kraft Foods, Heitman Steel, Prairie Farms, and American Steel. But the one that really got me, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Clothing retailer extraordinaire. Glicks.
Get your chicks from Glicks.
Thank you. Glick's used to call Granite City home. Now, of course, I was like, are they even still in business? So then I had to Google them to see. And they are still in business, but they moved north, I believe, to Michigan. Because their headquarters are no longer in Granite City. But who knew, right?
Right. If you're not from around this area, Glick's was a big little standalone store. And when chick jeans were all the fashion to wear, I'm not even sure. Do they make chick jeans now? Anyway, Glick's, their advertising, their slogan was, get your chicks at Glick's.
Get your chicks at Glick's. Get your chicks at Glick's.
Get your chicks at Glick's.
Yep. So anyway, Jen,
how funny.
Going down this, and there were some other little tidbits of info I learned, such as, and I didn't even put this in here, but Granite City became the town with the sundown law, meaning if you were black, you were not in that town after sundown. I mean, all this fascinating stuff that I didn't know. However, then I also was like, okay, Camille, get back on track. This is why it takes us forever to write a script, because we get sidetracked and go down these little rabbit holes.
Bad.
I know you are. But
I'm
I was just awful. Like, is Glick still in business? Let me go look. You know what I mean?
Well, I would have had the phone number to the grandparents of the person that started Glick's. But well, yeah.
I got you.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, this brings us all back to Madison Avenue, which is a cute little main street that runs down the center of Granite City. It is Saturday afternoon on January 5th, 2002, when Michael Gerbach drove to the floral store he and his partner owned together. His partner's name was Howard, but he went by the name Ed, last name Kirby. So Howard Ed Kirby, but from here on, he's going to be Ed Kirby. Now, Michael went to the store to check up on Ed because when Michael and Ed were getting ready in the morning, they were getting ready for the day. Michael had made breakfast, coffee and all that stuff. And Ed was like, okay, I'm leaving. And Michael was like, you know, the holidays are over. It's January. So things are starting to slow down. And Ed commented, you know, maybe if it's a little slow, I'll come home. You know, maybe I'll leave the store early. So Michael started calling the store and there was no answer. Well, he didn't think anything about it at first, but it was noon. He had not heard from Ed all day. And he thought, you know, I'm just going to follow up with him. Maybe, hopefully, luckily, we got busy, right? So he keeps calling. The store phone is just ringing off the hook because, you know, he apparently had left his cell phone at home. So Michael hops in the car and he drives down to the store. When he arrives, he called out for Ed and he didn't get a response. However, sadly, he soon finds Ed. Ed Kirby, age 48, is on the ground surrounded by a pool of blood. The popular, loved florist had been murdered. He was shot execution style in the back of the head, so he never saw it coming. Later on, a 9mm shell would be located nearby. His wallet was missing, and the cash register was empty. Michael was devastated.
Wow, a robbery, huh? Or so it seems.
Or so it seems. And this is a little shocking.
Small town.
Yeah, it's a little small town.
I can only imagine how fast the news spread, you know.
Mm-hmm. Which I think, too.
And how scared everybody must be. Because I don't believe there's a lot of murders out of Granite City.
There isn't. And I think also, and we'll talk about this later, this is why I think I couldn't get one of the victims' names correct. Because the only people, for the most part, that wrote about this crime were little podunk small town papers. And so they had differing names, but we'll get to that. So police arrive and they set out to investigate. As is most often the case, they begin with those closest to the deceased, hoping to either rule them out or rule them in. But they also need to find out some information, and police hope that Michael will be helpful with this and maybe tying up some loose ends. Michael needs to start at the beginning, and he tells police exactly what unfolded that morning. Michael stated that just like most mornings, they start their day together with coffee and then breakfast. Ed was getting ready to go to the shop and open it for what he would hope would be a busy Saturday. Now, as I'd mentioned earlier, Michael was kind of giving him a little bit, you know, I don't even know why you're rushing off to the store so early. It's right after the holidays. We're just opening back up. Whatever. Ed kind of calmed him down and said, listen, if it's not too busy by noon or noonish, I think I only have a couple deliveries. I'll close up the store early and maybe we can do something later on throughout the day.
Gotcha.
So unfortunately, after waiting till about noon, Michael started calling him just to check in and see what's going on. Again, he thought maybe he was on a delivery. So he kept calling. Well, after a series of unanswered phone calls were made and no one seemed to be picking up, Michael got a little bit nervous and thought maybe something happened to him. Maybe he slipped and fell in a puddle of water or, you know, you just never know.
Or just slipped and fell.
Or, yeah,
doesn't
totally.
Have to be a puddle of water, just fell.
That's when Michael headed down to the floral shop and was greeted with such a horrific sight. And that was finding the love of his life slain on the floor.
Oh, God. It's,
wouldn't that be terrible?
I can't even imagine that.
Oh, terrible. Ugh. God. Ugh. All right. Ed and Michael had been together for about 14 years at this point. The couple bought the business together and, you know, they were happy by all standards. They split the business duties like this. Michael was more of the business savvy guy. He did the money, the accounting, all of that. While Ed was the more creative one. He was the, you know, floral designer. He enjoyed working with people and that kind of thing. So he was more like the front guy of the floral store.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the store was always careful to leave only a small amount of money in the register. And they had decided to start doing that early on just because. So if somebody came to rob the store, you know, never thinking, of course, that you would be murdered for any amount of money. But at least if the store was held up, the person would not get very much money.
Right. That's smart.
So in order to rule Michael out, the police ask him to take a polygraph. And Michael is kind of a little upset, but he knows. You know, he knows what he needs to do. So he's more than happy to comply because he knows that will get him off their radar and get the police focusing more on who the real killer is and getting him.
Right.
Even though...
Which is, I know they always say you shouldn't take a polygraph test, but there's always that little thing in back of me saying, but if I take it, then they'll know for sure I didn't do it, you know?
And that's what I would think, too. However, Jen, things changed when Michael failed the exam.
Ooh.
Now, Detective Rich Sheridan, who was the lead on the case at this point, decide that, you know, they need some more evidence. But until then, they're going to go ahead and hold Michael overnight so that they can maybe come up with something that's either going to nail him or free him. Now, as Michael sat in that prison jail cell overnight, you know, obviously, could you imagine the day that your loved one is killed and then you're not arrested, but you're being held and you have to stay the night in jail? That's pretty, I can't even imagine, devastating.
Mm-mm.
However, during his stay at the fancy jail hotel, something occurred to him, and it was this. The flower shop had a fax machine, and that fax machine recorded all incoming calls to the shop, which meant investigators could go retrieve that, and they would see exactly when and what times Michael had called the store to check on Ed. This timeline meant that Michael was at home all morning and could not have been the one that killed Ed. With nothing else to hold Michael on, police have to let him go and send him on his way. I just can't imagine, like, you're grieving the death of your loved one and this is happening. It would be surreal, right?
It would be utterly surreal.
Authorities now have to rethink who would want the small-town florist dead. The area where the store is located is a busy little main street with lots of shops and people coming and going. Now, this was a Saturday morning. It was right after the Christmas holidays. But they think, you know, somebody had to see something.
Was there another floral in town? A floral?
Not nearby. No.
Probably not. Yeah, because it's such a small place.
Right. So police, they head out and they question everybody, and they're not really getting anything. Nobody can recall seeing anything. It's not unheard of to see people coming and going in stores, right? It's a Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. People shop. So desperate.
Right after Christmas.
Right. With their money that they got. Desperate. Mm-hmm. Or also hold, you know, I always loved doing holiday. When we were younger, you and I, we would always do our friends' holiday after Christmas because then we mm-hmm. could take our Christmas money and go buy stuff for ourselves and our friends, and it was on sale. Bonus.
Exactly.
Right? Desperate to get a crack in the case and knowing how important the first few hours are, Detective Sheridan decides he needs to call in the Major Case Squad of St. Louis. Now, the Major Case Squad of Greater St. Louis provides investigative services for homicides to the police agencies in several counties in and around Missouri and Illinois. And there's like eight of them, eight little counties. But that's a lot. I mean, that's a pretty big area for around these parts, right?
Well, and don't forget what a large surface area that I'm trying to say, what St. Louis is,
yeah,
right?
Right. Quite a bit, right? Quite a bit. When a serious crime occurs, the Major Case Squad is activated and the investigators are assigned to assist the local police department with the investigation and prosecution of the suspects involved in the case. Squad members, and this is so interesting to me, squad members may be detached from their regular duties to assist other agencies for between 5 to 15 days, depending on the need of the investigation. The major, the major case squad of St. Louis is recognized, and this is so cool, as being one of the top investigative squads in the United States and has a clearance rate of over 80% on the cases they are involved in. Isn't that awesome? There are currently over...
Go St. Louis.
Right? If you go look up major case squad on, you know, the internet and go to Wikipedia, it mentions New York City and St. Louis. Those are the two that come up. Which
New
like,
York City?
Really?
Really?
Really.
New York and St. Louis, like together?
Together. Those were the only two they mentioned. Whatever. It's Wikipedia, but still. Okay.
Well, still, I'll take it.
I know, right? I was kind of excited. So there are currently over 500 different investigators from Missouri and Illinois who are members of the major case squad. Now, these are experts in all different facets of crime, right? But they they basically volunteer their time to do this, and they come from all over.
Impressive.
Right? I think that's so cool.
It's very cool.
Now, lucky for us, Jen, Detective Sheridan also happens to lend his services to the major case squad, so he's pretty familiar with how it operates. Essentially, what happens is the squad moves in with all these investigators for a short amount of time, right? Fast and furious. This is so weird, but as I was thinking about this, because I was like, they just whoosh, swarm in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is how my mind works, and this is how you know I'm a little not right.
There's a lot of things that
right?
I know that you're not right.
Mm-hmm. So I envision the major case squad as this. You're outside and you drop a piece of candy on the ground. Just a piece of candy. Mm-hmm. So slowly, you know, 5 minutes later, a couple of ants are up there. Well, you come back 20 minutes later and they're like all over. They're like whoosh, right on it, right? And that's kind of what this is. They're only there for a certain amount of time, so they have to move fast and they have lots and lots of people, right?
Right.
So it wouldn't take too long before a witness actually comes to the station with some information. A woman who had worked at a shop nearby, just slightly across the street and down. You know, at first when the police came to her, she was like, I didn't see anything. But as she thought about it, kind of put the timeline together, something was bugging her. It didn't at first occur to her that it could mean anything, but it just kept gnawing at her. So she knew she needed to go in. She comes in and she tells police, Detective Sheridan and friends, that there was a man walking down the street that day carrying a bouquet of roses. And since that flower shop is the only one near there, it means that he must have been in that store in and or around the time of Ed's murder. Now, she's not able to see his face. He has a black jacket on. He's got his hood pulled up and he was walking away from her. But she did get a look that he had, you know, some flowers, red roses, and he was wearing a dark colored jacket with the hood up. Now, interestingly enough, Jen, the jacket had a reflective tape on the back. It ran along the back. Now, this isn't a lot, but at least it's something, right?
Right.
The major case squad gets together for a briefing and update. Investigator Craig Knight, whose primary focus up until this point was usually vice crimes, is brought in, and this is actually his first homicide case, or would turn out to be his first homicide case. He's going to work hand in hand with Sheridan to work the case. Now, while the jacket is not much to go on, Jen, it will prove meaningful later on. In other words, never think something doesn't matter.
Exactly. That's a good life lesson right there.
Sure does. I mean, sure is.
Everything and everyone matters.
Yep. Hold on a second.
It's a little OTCP advice right there.
As Knight and Sheridan are brainstorming, Knight mentions that he was contacted about another case in Sparta, Illinois. And, well, there just seems to be a few things that may be just a bit too similar between the two cases.
Like coinkydinks?
A coinkydink-dink. Ding-dong. On December 18th, just 3 weeks before Ed's murder, a video store clerk by the name of Randa Clarkson, who was age 39, was found murdered in the video store in which she was working. Now, here's a little note I gotta say, Jen. Here's a little thing. Randa Clarkson, I have found in the newspapers that she goes by Tanda with the T, Clarkson, Randa Clarkson, and then there was a TV show on her, and they had the name as Sally Wright. Now, I'm guessing Sally Wright was a fake name, probably because the family did not want her name televised. So, for continuity purposes, I'm going to call her by her last name because honestly, I'm just not really sure which one is her
first
name.
Which one it is, right? Now, the T and R are close together on the QWERTY keyboard.
Yeah.
So I wonder if
right.
there was just a really bad typist, such as myself.
Mm-hmm. But it's different.
Doing.
I checked different newspapers, and these were all like small-time newspapers, too. So that's why mm-hmm. I think it was, you know what I mean? It was, right.
Yeah. Okay.
It slipped.
I got you.
Bye.
Mm-hmm.
So a friend of Clarkson's had decided to pay her a visit at work, you know, just to hang out and catch up, kind of like we would. When she arrived, there was a strange man exiting the store, but he kind of acted like he worked there. He just was like, just out of place a little bit. Now, her friend knew all the employees, and he was not one. She went ahead and asked the man if where the employee was in the store. And the man had told her that, golly gee, beef, the employee, the female employee, had just left for lunch. Now, her friend was like, I don't know about that. And he kind of darted out the door and went on his merry way. So instead of leaving, her friend kind of sensed something was wrong. So she went ahead and went in the store because it's unlocked and nobody's there, right? Question mark. It is mm-hmm. a small town, but still. And that's when she saw the awful sight of her very good friend sprawled out on the floor, laying in a pool of blood, much like Ed. She raced
Nobody
out.
Needs to go through that trauma.
Right?
Seriously.
She raced outside and the man was gone, which honestly, lucky for her. I don't even know if I was getting a bad vibe. I don't even know if I'd go in the store, especially if the guy gave me the heebie-jeebies. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I know exactly what you mean.
So while she was there, she stayed put, called the police. The police came. She gave him a statement. She described everything she could, best she could at that moment. So after the Detective Sheridan and Detective Knight found out about this, they knew that they needed to go to Sparta and talk to the police there and see what they knew to kind of see if things matched a little bit. Detective Sheridan hops in the car and he goes to pay a visit to Sparta Police Chief Alan Young to find out some details about that murder and see if anything kind of seemed familiar with the murder they were working. Chief Young was more than happy to work with them. He himself had been the lead investigator on the case of the murder of Clarkson for the last past 3 weeks. And frankly, the case was at a standstill. He did tell Detective Sheridan that he interviewed the friend who was able to provide a pretty good sketch to the police of what the man looked like. However, how she described him was being a white male, average in all things, had a little scruffy beard, nothing stood out that would make him shocking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Police chief did say he was wearing gloves and a tan cap. Oh, and he had a black jacket with a reflective stripe on it.
Huh. Where have we seen one of those before?
Just like Ed, Clarkson was alone in the store. Just like Ed, it was during business hours on a weekend. And just like Ed, Clarkson was shot in the back of the head. The weapon that was used in the murder of Clarkson was a high .9mm handgun. Detective Sheridan is waiting for the ballistic results in the case of Ed's murder to come into the station. But as he waits, the time period of the major case squad assistance has ended. He lost his manpower, and he wants this case solved now. He doesn't just want it. He needs it solved now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here comes a call. And guess what, Jen? The bullets are a match. The same killer who killed Randa Clarkson, or Tanda Clarkson, killed Ed Kirby. And now police are wondering if there are more. But more importantly, they need to find him and they need to stop him.
Before he turns into a serial killer, no doubt.
Yep.
He's on his way.
A BOLO, or be on the lookout for, goes out to all the local agencies with a description of the man, a sketch, and that infamous black jacket. With that, the Sparta police chief steps back into the case, hoping to catch this killer and put him away. Police work runs in the family as Chief Young's stepson, Ryan Parker, was once a part-time Oakville, and that's not Oakville. I mistook it for Oakville because we have a Oakville right here, right mm-hmm. in South City, but it's Oakville. It's a small town in Illinois. But he
I
never
fairs.
Even heard of it. I had to look it up.
When I worked at Scholastic Book Fairs, my territory was Southern Illinois, so I know Oakville very well.
Oh, I had no idea.
So
his stepson right now is a correction officer at the Pontiac Correctional Facility. Just like with all the high-profile cases, you know, the more that can get involved, the better chance it'll be solved.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, time is racing by, and investigators are desperately hoping that that sketch provided by the Sparta police may be familiar to someone, and they will call police. They'll reach out and say, hey, I think I know who this is. In the meantime, they decide to see if they can track down where the gun was purchased. As they're working, trying to maybe find out where this gun or a gun similar to it had been purchased in and around the area, something unique happens, shall we say. January 30th, Michael is trying his best to repair his broken heart and mourn the death of his best friend and partner. He sits down and he's going through some bills and paperwork when something jumps out at him. Now, thinking that this could not possibly be right and trying to figure out even how or why this could have happened, he can't believe what he's seeing. And he knows he needs to contact police ASAP. Ed Kirby's credit card statement has a new charge on it from a gas station in Hazelwood, Missouri. But the charge occurred 2 days after Ed had been murdered. Now, for those that are wondering, Hazelwood is a northern suburb of St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael tells police that the couple had never, ever been to Hazelwood. Never, never even been there. So police ask Michael to bring the statement down to them pronto. Now, remember, Ed's wallet was stolen from him at the scene, and police are wondering if the killer is brazen enough or stupid enough to use a dead man's credit card. And if so, well, it's only a matter of time before justice runs a credit check on him.
Ooh.
After Michael brings the statement to police, they phone the credit card fraud department, and they're asking to see a list of all the charges between the day Ed was killed and the present time. Now, it seems that the killer had made, you know, several more charges on Ed's card, because you know how credit cards have like a shutdown date and then,
Yeah.
Like they have a shutoff day. So police are like, this is going to be it. This is how we're going to nab this guy. So they instruct,
we got him.
They instruct the credit card company to keep that card open. So that's what, how they're going to do it, right? They're hopeful that he's going to use that card again, and this is going to be the key or the card to catching him. So with this new information, something needs to be done, right? Like, this is a pretty good lead. So on January 31st, Detective Sheridan calls the major case squad once again and asks for more help. Now, they're close, but they need more hands. They need more eyes, more brains than just what the Granite City PD can provide, right? That's a pretty small little thing. And they all come together again, and they come up with a plan. Now, first up, because the Sting Dong keeps using the credit card all over the place.
Yeah, that's not very smart.
First up is to pinpoint all the places the card had been used. By doing this, they were able to determine a clear path the man was traveling, and that was between southern Illinois and various St. Louis suburbs. You could drive it like on a road and see. He was definitely a person of a creature of habit, if you will, right?
Mm.
You'd think you'd change that up, but no. Mm-mm. So, secondly,
some people just aren't meant to be criminals.
Well, mm-hmm. Secondly, Detective Sheridan decides to stake out several gas stations on that route. So he placed officers in over 20 gas stations, placed them there undercover, hoping that they would be there when this madman came and used Ed Kirby's card. Now, remember, the case squad is only available for a set amount of days, and so Detective Sheridan knows he needs to make this happen and happen now. A little side note, I think that would be so awesome to be an undercover cop at a gas station. Like, I would like to be there and know that secretly, right? Like, I just hang out with them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know I'm nosy and always have lots of questions.
Oh, so yeah. Like,
what are you doing here? What's going on? All right. Here we go, Jim. As we know, sometimes things happen along the way and, well, we learn from them. Like us in this podcast. I mean, how hard can it be, right? How many times did we say that? How hard can it be? So that is pretty much the case here. It's the little things that pop up that you don't count on, and they alter how things go. And then you're like, oh, darn it, I didn't think about that. You learn from it, you change it, and you're ready the next time. And that's exactly what happens here. Looking at the path that this killer seems to be driving, they decide to plant Detective Knight at a station in Freeburg, Illinois. Now, this is about the center point of the suspect's travel path, and it's also halfway between Sparta and Granite City, Illinois. The two little towns. At this time in 2002, when a credit card was used, it would appear on the cashier's receipt. So the game plan was they would be there and they would just look out for that credit card and its last four numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Technology is not quite as it is today, So it was a little bit more difficult for an immediate electronic notification, if you will. So cashiers would diligent, like they knew what to be on the lookout for. They knew the card, they knew the card number. And ideally, when that card ran over to their receipt on the register, or if, you know, somebody came in to the station, they'd see that. Mm-hmm. After the sale was complete, the receipt would print out saying that the card was good, or, you know, it was okay, right? Like it went through, in other words.
Yeah, approved. Mm-hmm. So, unlike many of mine in the 90s. Yeah.
It happens, Jen. I know. Here, use this one. It's the good one, I swear. It was just 2 days after the launch of the gas station plan, the killer paid a visit to that Freeburg gas station. And while Detective Knight was on duty, could you imagine? Woo! The cashier alerted the detective, who immediately ran outside to catch up with the car that just used that card. He runs up to the car and he yells, "Stop!" only to find an elderly man behind the wheel. This was not their guy. Like I mentioned before, you know, sometimes you're not yet aware of certain things. And then as you come aware, then you change how things go. Well, what they didn't yet know until they actually had this plan in place was that there was a lag time between the credit receipt printing and the card actually being used. So in other words, you know, you'd run the card through and fill up your gas tank, put the nozzle away, get in the car. And while you're getting in the car, there's a lag time. Then the receipt's printing in there. So in other words, you know, the lag time was mere seconds, but it was enough for the perpetrator to pull away onto the road and out of sight. So close and yet so far, and how frustrating for them to know he was right there.
And they missed it.
And he was gone.
But they didn't get any license plate numbers or anything like that?
No, he was gone. He ran up to the elderly guy.
Mm.
So that takes us to the next thing. Police are, I guess, beyond frustrated. I'd be like, You've got to be kidding me. So they decide to check cameras. Surely somebody has to have had cameras out there. One of these over 20 stations had to have cameras. By doing this, they learn two things. They learn he is always very careful. He uses the pump farthest away from the station and farthest away from the camera angles. He manages to keep his face covered fully or partially. Now, he did at one time, and they have a little snapshot of it. He did, however, venture into a station in Sparta to make a purchase. And when he did, he was careful to fully cover his face. It looked like to me he kind of had a hat on and like big turtleneck, whatever, and sunglasses. And so you couldn't really see his face at all. But how they knew this was him, not only from the credit card purchase, but he was wearing a black jacket with reflective tape. So this let officers know for sure, this is the guy. He's doing exactly what we want, but this is not working.
We've got him, Dano. Yep.
Book him. So a week passes by, and the subject is not using the card. But authorities are getting panicked, and they know that, you know, the major case squad is only theirs for a few more days. They need to catch him before they lose this extra help, because they're going to lose all this help at all these stations. And this is like, they know what he's doing. If he strikes again, they want to be able to get him.
Let's get him.
Desperate to figure out how to get this guy, detectives decide to go in and question station managers, employees, about how they can, or if they can, override the pumps and perhaps get real-time use of a credit card as it's being used instead of having it print out on the receipt. Well, it didn't take very long, and they did. They figured out a way to do it. And basically, the way that I kind of understood it is that, like, if you pull up to a pump and you're at 6 and maybe you're a male, right?
Mm-hmm.
Versus the other pump that's being used by a female, I'm going to hit a button and then that's going to show me that credit card being used on that pump at that moment versus not. Does that make sense?
Right. They're going to focus in on possible suspects.
So if they see somebody, they're going to hit a button and then that takes them right to that pump and then they can kind of see the credit card, right? This information, this new way that they figured out to bypass this, is being passed along to all those officers that were sitting at the stations across the metro area of St. Louis and Illinois, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that did the trick, Jen. Bam!
They got him?
They get a hit at a gas station in St. Peters, Missouri. Now, that's another suburb of St. Louis.
And that's really far from Granite City. That's an hour and some odd away.
Sure
hour
is.
And a half, maybe? Yeah.
Detective Knight is excited. He races to the scene. And when he gets there, at first, it wasn't quite what he expected. The officers that had been on duty were parked, and they're just sitting in the car. There's nobody under arrest. There's nothing going on, right? So he hops out, and he's like, whoa, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? Now, the officers inform him that they were parked, and they were keeping a watch on the station, the comings and goings of people getting gas and all that stuff. No big deal. That's what they're supposed to do. When all of a sudden, one of their cell phones rang, and it was the store clerk from inside the station and said, the man is here and the sale is in progress right now.
The call is coming from inside the station.
It is. It really is. So they race. They're like, what? So they jump out of their cars, guns drawn, and they start yelling at this man to stop, stop. You know, he was pulling away from the pump and he complies. He stops. As the police get closer, their hopes start to fade. They kind of start to lower their guns because hanging in the back seat was a police uniform with the police hat with the police hat on the seat, right? And they're like, we messed up. This is not our guy. So they start to approach him a little bit, and they're like, you know, getting ready to apologize for the trouble. And they take a good look at his face, and there's going to be no need for an apology, Jen. The man is wearing a baseball cap and a black jacket with reflective tape.
We got him.
They scream, hands up, and exit the car with their guns drawn. They drag him out of that car, and they call another vehicle to get there immediately. The man's taken into custody by the officers, and they arrange for him to have a nice little taxi drive in a in a car over to Granite.
Nice escort?
Uh-huh. Granite City PD. Well, Detective Knight is like, that just got way better. Because, you know, he arrived thinking, this is not the scene I wanted. I wanted cops here. I wanted lights. I wanted all this stuff. And these guys did it. And it was kind of, wasn't a big
hoo-ha,
awesome. Right?
Yeah.
So
just doing our job.
Just doing our job, man. Detective Knight is thrilled with this information. And he heads over to Granite City to pay this possible murderer a visit. The man sitting across from detectives seemed to be very cool, confident, with that ooh, so familiar blank stare, empty eyes, just very, wasn't sweating, wasn't nervous, wasn't, you know, chatting.
Calm, cool, and collected.
Yep, wasn't chatting, wasn't crying. And honestly, I think it shocked the detectives because the man, immediately, he was very forthcoming and he provided details about all of his crimes. Police decided to start with the Sparta murder of Clarkson. This is, I don't even know what to say. Wait till you hear this. The suspect tells officers he didn't go in looking to kill anyone. He went into the video store and he had asked the store employee about a certain movie title and that he had wanted to rent it. He'd come in to rent it. He mentioned the movie to Clarkson, and Clarkson mentioned that she really liked that movie too. She really liked it. She enjoyed it. She thought it was a good, solid movie. It turns out that that was the movie that his estranged girlfriend liked, and she liked that movie a lot. He was livid over the fact that this clerk would have the audacity to like the same movie as his ex-girlfriend. As Clarkson turned her back to get the movie for him, he shot her in the back of the head. No robbery gone bad, no jilted lover case of mistaken identity, just a loser who was angry that another person could or would like the same movie as his ex.
Of all the dumb excuses to murder someone.
Oh, just wait. There's another dumb excuse coming your way.
So aggravating, frustrating, bastard.
Fast forward 3 weeks later into the flower shop. The suspect tells officers he went into the flower shop to get some flowers for his now girlfriend. I guess it's a new girlfriend. He tells them that he went inside the shop because in the past, he had went there and got his girlfriend her favorite flower. And that would be peach roses. When Ed Kirby approached the killer and asked, hey, can I help you? The suspect told Ed that he needed a dozen peach roses. Now, mind you, this is January, and I always say I learn something every case we do. And this was a little, it didn't even occur to me. Ed Kirby apologized and said, you know what? At this time of the year, peach roses, they're not available to us. And I have many other flowers for you to choose from since, you know, this is a floral shop and all.
And it's just after Christmas.
The man was not happy, demanding, once again, peach roses. She only likes peach roses. And Ed tries to be nice. He's like, listen, we have this, we have this, we have this, whatever. And the man is just steadfast that he needs those stupid peach roses.
Lord have mercy.
So Michael would always describe Ed as very friendly, outgoing, probably more so than he, Michael. and that everybody liked him. He could talk to anybody. But the other thing about Ed is that, you know, he's not going to back down. He's not going to, you know, he's going to say, listen, pal, sorry, right? And I don't know if that...
But there's nothing you can do. What do you want?
Thank you.
We don't have
Thank
it.
You.
You either leave the store or you pick something else.
Yep.
We don't have peach roses.
So with
That's
that...
That's ridiculous.
With that, this stranger drew his gun on Ed. Ed saw the gun come out, and of course, he turned to run. And when he did so, the man shot him in the back of the head. After Ed fell to the ground, the man ruffled through his pockets and stole his wallet. He walked over to the cash register and began hitting buttons until it popped open and took the cash. What a jerk. This is the creme de la creme, if you will. On his way out, he helped himself to a dozen roses on the counter and exited out the back of the store. Seems like red
that
roses
weren't peach.
Seems like red roses were sufficient now, jerk. What? Police often wondered who would be the man responsible for these senseless murders. You know, because I'm sure they were trying to figure out what kind of person would do this. How could he do it? How did he get away with it for so long? This should have been a no-brainer, right?
Mm-hmm.
They now know who he is and why he did it. And Jen, it seems he's not a stranger to those working so close to the crimes. He is 24-year-old Ryan Parker, the same Ryan Parker who is the stepson of the Sparta police chief, Alan Young. Who led the investigation into the murder of the video store clerk and also raised Ryan since the age of 5.
Oh, my gosh.
Could you imagine?
Really?
And he saw that, like, okay, we'll get to that in a minute.
Hopefully there is a reason why he's like he is.
I don't think so. Hold on. In June 2002, Ryan Parker pleads guilty to the murders of Tanda Clarkson and Ed Kirby in exchange for not going for the death penalty. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole and was serving time, ironically, at Pontiac Correctional Center, the very same place he worked as a guard. Now, he's also serving with somebody that was another topic of our true crime podcast, and we covered him in episode 8. That's right, Chris Coleman. Now, Chris Coleman was transferred out of that facility for his own safety shortly after Ryan went in. Now, it seems that Ryan, just like Chris, was transferred out of that facility sometime in 2011. I was unable to find where he is now. And it important to note in a news article that I pulled up, his stepdad said he really hoped that they would find out one day why he did this, as well as where he is spending his life. So I'm guessing they have no contact with him anymore. They don't know what facility he's in. And so I Googled some stuff to see if I could find him, and I didn't find him. Now, granted, I didn't put a whole lot of time into it.
Well, but no offense, if your stepdad is in a bigwig in a police department and they can't find out where the guy's located, I doubt if we can find it. I mean, we're pretty good internet detectives.
Yeah, that's right.
But
I got my Facebook degree, don't you know?
Duh. But no, that's a wow.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Right? And that's the case of, you ready? The killer in Steel City.
Wow. Nice.
Thanks. Is that a humdinger or what? Now that is a humdinger, isn't it? And you know, I know I say this
killing
all the time.
Somebody because you want peach roses.
Or killing somebody because they had the audacity to like the movie you did.
To like a movie that your ex-girlfriend did. That is.
For nothing. That's why, I know I say this. I say this all the time, but I swear, when somebody is so ruthless and callous like this, I just have to think, it didn't just start with that poor video store clerk. He had to do something else. I do think it's interesting, too, that he chose a career in law enforcement. And after being that part-time police officer, he didn't really like that so much. And so he went to go be a corrections officer in, which would later be where he first was sentenced. I have to think to myself a couple things. This sort of person, to me, indicates sort of a bully, if you will, right? Like, you're not, I get to rule the world. I'm doing what I want. I get to play God. So him being a part-time police officer in a small little town, that probably was not exciting enough for him. It didn't give him the control he needed. So that's why he went back and became a correction officer. Now, I could be wrong. And I'm not saying they're all like that. I was just trying to figure this out. And knowing that his stepfather is a police chief of a town. I mean, that's kind of a big deal. So also you have to look at the psychology of why he would choose to murder somebody in the town his dad rules over, sees over, knowing that his dad would be in charge of that murder. And then you have to think, right, too, that sketch that was presented to him by the witness, right? Like, how did they, you know what I mean? Like, how did the dad, but I guess you would see a sketch of a blonde person. You're not going to automatically think, hey, that looks like my daughter or my son. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so I get that that would be kind of hard, but still at the same time, I think that's really bizarre. You know what
well,
I mean?
No offense. I can never see the compare, like when you compare sketches with the real people, I have always have a hard time with it.
Right.
I'm either like, oh my God, that totally looks like them, when it absolutely doesn't.
Well, and like you take today, he's a white guy with a little facial hair. Have you been outside your house lately? It's
yeah, exactly.
Pretty much every dude. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
24. I mean, 24 years old.
But you're right, though. There has to have been something.
I just don't think, you know, that
in his psyche
can be, right? Yeah. That just can't be. You just don't do that. I don't know. Bizarre.
I mean, lash it out, going full Karen because you've had a bad day. I get that. But, like, no.
That would be if the video store clerk did not have that movie and you were desperate to watch it that night. Not that, oh, we have it and I like it too. You know what I mean?
Ridiculous.
So
absolutely needless death.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting story.
I've never heard of that. Is that what you're going to say? Because that's what you always say. It's like a mind reader.
It's exactly what I always said. But I'm like kind of shocked because I'm kind of up with things that go on within a 50-mile radius.
I know it. I know it. And this wasn't that long ago, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. Well, I'm glad he's caught. And what also is very interesting is you don't know where he's at.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I don't know that. And
that his family doesn't know? That's really weird.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now. I'm going to tell you why, Jim.
I mean, he is still incarcerated, correct?
Yes. I'm going to tell you why. I guarantee it. He is the son of a police chief. He himself had police background. He was a police officer and he worked in the correctional facility. So if you're going to take that little person and you're going to drop them in a prison, what's going to happen to them? They're about one notch up from a pedophile. That would be...
Well, no, I get
that. He's not going to be safe. No, so what I'm saying is they moved him and I'm sure he doesn't even have that same name anymore. And he's living his best life as Ted Black from, you know...
Kaczynski.
Yeah.
It's just weird that his family doesn't know where he is. That's bothersome to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could pick him up and use the same name and put him in down in Arkansas somewhere. Nobody would know he was an ex-cop. Right.
And, you know, maybe they said that. Maybe the family does know and they fear for his safety. Or maybe they were like, I'm horrified and want nothing else to do with you.
Yeah, but if the dad, didn't he say he was looking for him or
no, he just
not.
Said that they hope that soon that they would, you know, find out where he went, where he is. But like I said, he could just say that, too, to protect his stepson. Now, he might not want anything to do with them. But as a mom, I'd still be like, I hate you for what you did, but you're my kid.
Or I hate what you did, but I love you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But just talk about senseless killings. My God.
Well, I'm never going to look at peach roses again.
And I just kept thinking blue roses. Blue roses from pleurisy. What's pleurisy? From the Tennessee Williams play, The Glass Menagerie. And so every time, it's peach roses. Do you remember that? Probably not.
Not really.
She says something about her pleurisy that she has, and he thinks she says blue roses.
Blue roses.
It's blue roses.
Gotcha.
Blue roses. Yeah. Whatever.
Got ya.
Just a little something there. Yeah.
Interesting.
And you know, I don't know, part of me too, the psychology of it. I think he wanted... There had to be some connection there with the police, too, because he was so forthcoming. I watched a video of his confession, and he's very, like, it's like me explaining to you what I did on Friday night. Very, right? Just very, no tears, no nothing, just matter of fact. And, oh, yeah, okay, so here's how this happened. Just bizarre. And so part of me is like, plus you're using a dead man's credit card. Hello? Like, you know you're going to get caught, right? So part of me thinks he had to have wanted to get caught. Like, was he trying to get back at somebody?
Stepdad or mom?
I don't know.
Because, you know, what a great way to try to ruin your stepdad's career as a police officer if you become a serial killer.
Well, and he, you know, that was right underneath his nose.
Nose.
The whole time, right?
Wow, but, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, yeah. So that is the story of Ryan Parker, age 24. who killed these people.
Ruined his life. Yep. Along with many, many others.
Yep. Terrible.
Very terrible.
Yeah. That was that was a thing. But what have you been watching any good? You know, I'm caught up on almost every single TV and movie ever.
Yeah.
In the history of ever.
No, I've been watching a lot of European, my lovely VPN. I've been watching a lot of shows over from across the pond mm-hmm. in London.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, it's stressful time. A lot of things happening around. And so I've been going into a hole. As I only study murder now. I used to love it all the time. Is that a thing? Now I have to do happy things. So I have been rewatching my favorite guilty movie almost all nonstop, and I'm driving my family crazy. So that's always been fun.
What
you
movie?
You want to ask me what my favorite?
I know what it is. I think, does it have two words in the title?
The one I've been watching a lot is Pitch Perfect.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. That's
cute. Because it's fun, and yeah. It's got like the fun music, and mm-hmm. I've been singing the music a lot. So yeah.
That's good. I've been watching that a lot. I like that. That's good.
Yeah. What about you? Have you been watching? What else have you watched that's been interesting?
Well, I think that I've told you this because I'm obsessed with it. My good buddy that I work with at Christmas got me a adult paint by numbers. And I was like, that's so lame. I'm never going to do that. That's lame. Okay, I did it. I'm addicted. And I've ordered other ones now. So that's what I do. And I'm like, this is my quiet time. My quiet time. And I paint.
You know what? And you've shown me pictures of them. And you really are doing a great job.
Well, it's paint by numbers, Jen. It's not real hard.
No. I know. But I mean, there are certain looks to paint by numbers
mm-hmm.
pictures. And from what I'm seeing, it doesn't really look like they're paint by numbers.
You have to see it close up. But that's okay. I don't care. Because you know what? I was like, I don't care if I do the crappiest job ever. I'm happy right now. And this is making me happy. And it's good because I will put the TV on. And you concentrate, like you really have to concentrate to stay in the lines and what kind of brush. Because, yeah, the one
that's why I could never do it.
The first one only came with three mm-hmm. brushes, three different brushes. I was like, that's not going to work for me. So, of course, I get online and I order a set of like 18. Now, they're all about the same size and I can't figure out which does what. But it doesn't matter. It's the point that I have them. But anyway, I'll put the TV on. And it's just enough that you can like watch the TV and paint. Watch the TV and paint, right? So
nice.
It's like, takes your mind somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Like you have to kind of think about it. However, this is where this is all coming to. So I'm doing that. But last Saturday, I had the best day ever. I watched four. And all I kept thinking was, this is us back when we were in high school. Four teeny kind of movies. But they're out now. They were so good. Like it made my heart happy. I sent that. Remember I sent you a thing. Teen. Yeah. Teen bopper movies. Teeny bopper.
I sent you
that text and I said, has your daughter seen this? Because she needs to watch it. And you said, no, she doesn't really watch movies. So that's what I did. But it was just
my youngest one does, though.
Just so sweet. Just sweet movies. And that made me happy. That just made me really happy. Yeah, it's good.
We watched my youngest daughter came up and wanted to watch It 2. We had already watched the It 1. And she wanted to watch It 2. And she loves it. She's like scary movies like I do. So that was fun to kind of watch it. And, you know, my kids, I remember just watching things as a family, you mm-hmm, know, and mm-hmm. my kids don't do that. They like go into their rooms mm-hmm. or.
It's called being a teenager. Those days are gone. And yeah. I thought I would never
but
miss
now
them.
When they can,
but I kind of do.
When they can enjoy movies that aren't cartoons, mm-hmm. you know, it's mm-hmm. kind of disappointing.
Well, my daughter.
But every now and then.
My daughter is a huge movie. Well, I'm just going to say it right now. She's a snob. She even says it. She's mm-hmm. like, I'm so pretentious, I can't stand myself. Because she is. But she, so this guy I work with is just like that. And so, like, he will ask me about that stuff. And I go, I haven't watched that movie yet, but my daughter has. I'll send her over. Because it's very, she, like I said, she's a pretentious little, like, every movie that's coming up and out, not the blockbusters, because that's not her style.
Right.
Right. And
art house ones.
Yes. Like she loves all that. But she did turn me on to some really, really good movies. And once in a while, she'll be like, you have to sit down and watch this movie with me. Now, granted, and if you know me, Jen, you know me. If I know that you've seen that movie, I'm going to ask you a million questions. And it falls out of my mouth before I even know it. So I'll be like, why is he doing that? Is this going to happen? Well, you know, like mm-hmm. I'm sure Nico cuts it out. But when you're doing your cases, I'm all like, are they going to kill her? Are they? Oh my. Right. Like it's almost. Mm-hmm. But half the time.
If she kills him, I'm going to be pissed. Yeah. Uh-huh.
It comes out of my mouth before I even know it. So honestly, she will turn me on to these movies and it lasts about somewhere between 25 to 30 minutes. And then she's like, I can't watch movies with you. And she's out. But that's okay. Because then I finish the movie and it's good.
Awesome.
Just saying.
Another thing, you know, people are getting mysterious packages from China.
Seeds.
With seeds.
Uh-huh.
I'm getting them with t-shirts.
No, you're not.
I've gotten three so far.
What? What do they say?
Well, one is of a skeleton riding a bomb, and it's got a helmet on, and it's giving people the finger, and it's tie-dye.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another one has, like, this sun floating around on it. And there was another one. I forgot what that was. I think it had, like, ocean waves or something on it. Yeah.
Well, this...
And, of course, my youngest one is immediately drawn to the one with the skeleton giving the finger to somebody.
Yeah, that goes great.
She's thinking she's
school.
A skater now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you got to put all that together and see if there's somebody's trying to tell you something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's, I guess. I don't know.
Scary.
Kind of funny, though.
All right, Jen, that's all I got. Right. I hope you have a nice week. I hope everybody else has a nice week, further week and weekend and all that good stuff. And I guess until next time, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Bain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
Record.
Nico!
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 Nico, Nico, Nico!
Let's get it started, yeah. Let's get it started.
Yeah, okay. Okay, sorry.
Sauget, Illinois. That's where if you've got any dancing ability, exotically... You can go over there and get some cash.
That's not all you're going to get over there, but okay.
Everything and everyone matters.
That's right, buddy. Okay, sorry.
Except Cam. Cam doesn't really matter.
She doesn't. It's okay, though. I'm okay with it. Now, it's not...
a joke.
Hey, it's okay. I was checking my text. I'm doing this. I'm reading ahead. I'll tell you about that later.
Your eyes on the prize.
I got eyes on the prize. I'm trying to, I'm reading ahead and still reading this, but then I'm thinking about whatever. You know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying.
Oh, I get you. I know.
Abolo, or as we know it, be on the lookout for, goes out to all the local agencies with the...
I thought you were going to say Ebola.
No. Abolo. Abolo.
Abolo.
Abolo. Abolo.
It's not a buy one,
nope,
get one.
No, that buy one, lose one.
No, that's a BOGO. That's a BOGO. Yeah. Okay. Never mind.
It's okay. Back to me, Jen. Back to me. That's where you say it's always about you. You always make
I
a
know.
Comment.
I thought it. Oh, I really did. I thought it. Okay. But yeah. All right.
I'm proud of you. Look
it's
at you.
Always about you.
Look at you holding stuff in. I like it. That's bad
I
for
know.
You. Though. It's bad for you. Just get it out. Get
so
it out.
So hard.
Just like the Exorcist. Get it out. Get it out. To use a dead man's credit card. And if so, well, it's only a matter of time before justice runs a credit check on him.
Ooh. Nice.
That was my terrible joke. It was terrible.
I know. I was debating whether I should laugh or not, but it was a really bad joke.
It was really bad, but it made me giggle at 6 a.m.
Horrible.
I was right.
Oh, I know it. I know. I know you.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just... you always try to work puns and stupid shit in.
It's terrible. Okay, but what a dummy. Seriously? Idiot.
That joke? I know.
No, not the joke. God. I don't like you. Back to the story.
But I love you. Okay. Getting to know you. Right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
He started with the Sparta murder.
I started with the Sparta.
Hold on. I need the water.